This is Snakes and Otters, a pointless discussion of eternal questions. Get ready. We're about to live in your head rent-free.
Oh, I just blanked there. Sorry there, folks. We're back here for Code of Honor today. And we're following up here with our Native American theme with the Code of Honor.
I am Martin.
And I'm Robert.
And I'm Francis.
And I'm Andre.
And I'm Cajun. And we're back here at the ranch out in the Holy Land.
So, Cajun, I'll edit that blank
Please
space
do.
There. Yeah. I mean, the laughter we'll have to keep, but that long pause will...
Yeah, I was looking at my quote there, and it's a long quote today, in a sense.
Right,
it's actually part of a speech. A pretty famous speech by Chief Joseph, one of the more famous Native American chiefs, and near the end of the Indian conflict, you would say, came in the early 1900s there. And this speech is from 1903 that he gave in Washington.
And this is Joseph of the Nez Perce, right?
Right.
Yes. Yes, we all had pictures of him in our history books. At least I did.
Yes.
He's one of the few that I remember being covered positively.
His words probably reached more people about the conflict at that time than was listened to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And given credence, I would say. So here's the part we're going to do, and I'm going to probably jump back to a few of other parts of the speech as we go through this discussion. Yeah. Good words do not last long unless they amount to something. Words do not pay for my dead people. They do not pay for my country now overrun by the white man. They do not protect my father's grave. They do not pay for my horses and cattle. Good words will not bring me back my children. Good words will not make good the promise of your war chief, who was General Miles at the time. Good words will not give my people health and stop them from dying. Good words will not give my people a home where they can live in peace and take care of themselves. Now, words, whether sounding good or not, mean nothing without honor behind them.
I tell you what, this
honor.
Is a
okay.
Scathing indictment.
Yeah, and at the right time, 1903, this is kind of when everything is, the dust is settling on the changes that have happened.
And it's a scathing indictment, but not done in anger or violence. That's the beauty of these
sadness.
Words.
Yeah, sadness.
Sadness.
Yeah.
Sadness
and from the heart.
And pain.
Yes, trauma.
It really cuts. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know how if it would have been taken as seriously as it would be today, you know, over 100 years ago, but... you know, to me, this
taken
is
differently. Certainly,
you know, yeah, it's scathing. It's cutting, and it should just bring total shame to anybody who hears
it. Well, yeah, because it goes into the details.
Yes.
If we just did, and occasionally I applaud you for taking the whole quote, because the first line would have given you what you needed, but it would not have given that proper context.
Yes,
it's really necessary to hear that pain, that trauma, and that make that indictment, because it's not just in, like he says, it's just not what you say, it's what you do. And every single line, every sentence that he has after that is about something that was done. And done to his people.
Yes, contrary to the good words that the white man had given.
That's right. Well, there is absolutely a hypocrisy that he's calling out.
Yes.
And I'm sure one of you guys will quote Doc Holliday at some point with regards to that, because it's
well, now you're going to have to do it because you brought it up.
Oh, it says, my hypocrisy knows no bounds.
There you go.
But
I thought he said his hypocrisy only goes so far.
Well, he said it both. Yeah,
yeah, my hypocrisy only goes so far.
That was the early quote, but at the end, when he's in the bed, it's knows no bounds. That's right.
Yeah.
Exploring the Church of Rome there. But anyway, not to go off into...
the mysteries of the church.
That's right. No, we're not going to go off
of
that
church
because...
of Rome.
It's from his perspective as a Native American and as a chief.
As a leader.
As
yes.
a leader, because he is speaking not only... It's personal. He speaks of his father's grave, but he also speaks not only of that and his children, mm-hmm. but of his people. And I don't know... I would be very interested to know what he hoped to accomplish by this, because in many respects it's almost like it's fatalistic. It's like, this is done.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I'm going to speak the truth. Absolutely. I'm going to tell you what you did, even though there's nothing that can be done to change it,
Where and when was the speech delivered? Who was the audience?
The speech was delivered in 1870. No, that was the flight. That's when they made a run for Canada before they were turned back instead of just letting them go. The speech was in Washington, January 17th, 1879.
Mm-hmm.
He passed in 1903, so okay, he actually made it to the 1900s.
All right, so, right, but he was still a young man when he made the speech.
Fairly, I forget exactly how old he was.
Maybe well, yeah, I mean, but if he lives to 1903, you know, he lives 30 years longer. He's
but
got to be
like
at
I say, he's talking about his people, the children of the tribe. I mean, everything, yeah. And that goes back to the Native American way of looking at everything. Yeah. They don't look singular. They look as a group to themselves, as a tribe. It is all one and the same within the tribe.
Yeah, you pushed us to this extremity. Now you have to do something for us. You've cut out how we supported ourselves and cut that out from underneath of us.
Yeah, it's that's so the now, end of the quote. Yeah, how do we take care of ourselves?
Yeah, now what are you going to do? So I think Cajun here has pulled another quote that ties to some episodes we did. Prior to him joining us, but if you remember, we've struggled with this idea of words versus action.
We have, yes. And it's a common theme we return to, yes.
Yeah, so, you know, we did this that, you know, words without action are impotence, action without words are chaos, and savagery. So, goodness.
Do you need some bourbon to clear your throat?
I'm wondering if it is the bourbon or if I'm just talking too much.
You're not talking too much, no.
So, I love how Cajun has tied something completely new to something we did when it was just the three of us.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there are universal themes we love to come back to, and this certainly is one.
Well, this is not just a universal theme as far as words versus actions, but this is a universal problem.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, whether you want to talk about how because what it is one group with power over another failing their responsibilities
with great power comes great responsibility.
Must also come great responsibility.
Yeah. I don't even necessarily think it was they failed their responsibilities. It was intentional.
Because I say they failed their responsibilities because morally they did have responsibility.
Well, yes.
Oh, yeah. And, they never recognized that.
They did because by law they made these treaties.
That's true. You're right.
So they acknowledged their responsibility.
Which even heightens the hypocrisy.
And then they ignored it when it's not.
Well, I mean, you're looking at 1887 with the Dawes Act. That's when they allowed Native Americans to be citizens of the U.S., but only if they accepted the land grants that went attached to that Dawes Act. Now, ironically, the Dawes Act was giving 160 acres to the head of each Indian family if they claimed it. Anything that wasn't claimed, the government sold, and it was supposed to go back into Indian schools and what have you. By the time all was said and done, less than a third of the land was in Native hands. Everything was sold off for profits. So, but that didn't include all the Native Americans. So you've got in 1924, you've got the Native American Citizenship Act, which gave citizenship to all Native Americans born in the U.S. But that still didn't even give them the right to vote necessarily, depending on which state they were in. They didn't have that until 1957. So, I mean, it was a constant having to do revision after revision.
Because I don't know the details here. Other than by violating the Constitution, how can they be given citizenship, and how do then the states deny it? Again, other than by violating civil rights.
Let's ask some of our ladies.
It wasn't that.
Well, they never legally had the vote.
They had citizenship, but they didn't have the right to vote. Women were citizens of this country, so were blacks, but they didn't have the right to vote until, you know,
technically, once they were no longer slaves, they had the right.
They had the right.
Technically,
it was suppressed.
Barriers were erected to keep it from happening.
Well, because we had
literacy tests and things that they would fail.
Because we have, by definition, states control the elections. There's no such thing as a quote unquote federal process for that. Every state.
I don't know. I think we're getting pretty close to that.
Well, and we could have a long conversation about that too. Because
Colorado.
Well, that's you're exactly right. As we're going through that, there is some oversight to that on the federal level, which was a groundbreaking constitutional ruling that would that
the
literally
the Supreme Court clearly said that in federal elections, states do not have the right to mandate their own elections.
State
elections they do, but not in federal.
Yes,
and that is a huge.
You have to give the people their choices.
Yeah,
and some of the western states were the first ones to give women the right to vote.
Yes,
Wyoming, Colorado, out through that way before anybody else even considered it.
Absolutely, because it was the 19th Amendment that did that. That made it universal. Fascinating constitutional.
So Chief Joseph is saying, okay. You know, words are great, but you're not taking any action.
What have you done for me lately?
To put your money where your mouth is.
Yeah, the consequences of those actions you're ignoring.
Well, yeah, it's not just that you haven't done anything for me. It's what you did do was literally killing us.
Yeah, you have to live with the consequences of those actions, and words aren't enough.
Yeah.
Well, let's give it a quick listen here on what he said on after that.
All right, go ahead.
Go ahead.
His speech. I'm tired of talk that comes to nothing. It makes my heart sick when I remember all the good words and all the broken promises. There's been too much liking by men who had no right to talk. Too many misrepresentations have been made. Too many misunderstandings have come up between the white man about the Indians. If the white man wants to live in peace with the Indian, he can live in peace. There need be no trouble. Treat all men alike. Give them all the same law. Give them all a chance to live and grow. All men were made by the same great spirit chief. They are all brothers.
Yeah, way, way ahead of his time. And, you know, and I think, Robert, you hit the nail on the head. The reason that we would not do that comes down to one word, power.
And greed.
Well, yeah, which is a function. Greed is a function of power.
I don't know, I think you could go the
other
way.
Or you could go the other way. That's correct. I mean, but they're certainly inextricably connected because that where there is money, there is power in this society.
And power in and of itself is not a bad thing.
No.
It is when you pair it with greed and narcissism.
With human nature,
anger,
perhaps.
And violence.
Power as an absolute or as an abstract is morally neutral.
Right. It's a tool.
Right. But human nature and power together don't mix well.
Well, power corrupts.
Part of the problem that you get into with a lot of this is individuals tend to see those that aren't like them as less than.
Oh yeah,
That's
racism is based on
and,
that.
And we've done this repeatedly.
Yeah.
I mean, we in the 40s, the internment camps. We had German internment camps here in the U.S. We had Japanese internment camps here. Yeah. And, you know, it's all of this is based off of man's inhumanity towards other men.
Right. But how is it able to be codified into law or into policy? And therein lies the question is, are leaders either buy into this or acquiesce to that, and which leads me to the question: Is this a function of democracy?
It is a stroke of the pen. The Constitution: each slave shall count as 3/5 of a person.
But how did that law get written in there? Was that a function of democracy or a majority?
That was an accounting thing, a worth thing.
Yeah.
It turned into a worth thing,
right?
Yeah.
But it started out as an accounting thing.
Well, it was negotiated too, because
it was negotiated
because the North wanted them to count as a person, and the South says no, you will not.
Well, the other way around.
Yeah. Because that increased their stay in Congress, the North said no, absolutely you can't do that.
But the point is, it was simply written, agreed, negotiated.
Democracy.
Yes.
Well,
all it takes is enough people to agree, and you can do anything.
Well, you ask how, and the how is the very first line, the very first words of this quote. Mm-hmm. It's the good words.
Yeah.
You know, you start out with those good words, and it sounds really good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it sounds beneficial and magnanimous.
So in other words, if you're a good enough orator and you can make your case well enough, you can get anything you want done.
Yes.
I would say the example of Adolf Hitler would say that.
I was going to say,
yes.
There's no question.
He says a lot
those
sometimes.
Weren't good words, though. Those weren't good words.
Well,
they were
good words to the downtrodden people.
When I say good, I don't mean morally good. I mean effective.
Well, yes,
good as in exactly.
That's not what Chief Joseph is.
That's correct.
He's talking about moral words.
He is correct.
Yes.
There are value to our words, because our words are a reflection of the better angels of our nature.
Not necessarily.
Can be or should be.
Yes.
Again, this we are always, and I, especially for me, we're always come back to this dual nature of humanity. Who is this animal that can be so wonderful and tender and kind?
The paragon of animals, as Shakespeare would say.
And then at the same time, be this incredibly brutal savage.
Rapacious.
And he's right. Chief Joseph is right here that, mm-hmm. yes, things start with good words. It starts with the moral proposition, mm-hmm. but also true, as we've said, without then the actions that your words have stirred, that's mm-hmm. impotence.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it makes us into a nation of liars, to use Thomas More's words.
And we were to the Native American.
Very much so. That's right. Chief of the double tongue.
Yeah, and it's what's so powerful about the Josie Wales is that in that scene with Ten Bears and saying, you know, no sign paper can hold the iron. It must come from men. Your intentions must be true and follow on to those words.
Your actions have to be true. Yeah. The Cliff's Notes version of that speech is, your words are pretty, but what do your actions say?
Right. Yeah. Right.
Are they consistent with that? And, of course, in his indictment is absolutely not.
No.
Right. Yeah. You know, and Josie Wales saying, you know, that's right, I'm not promising anything extra. Of course, I'm offering, you already have.
That's right. I'm giving you life, and you're giving me life.
Right. All I'm saying is that we don't have to kill each other.
Men
to have
can live together
things.
Without butchering each other.
And as you continued into the speech, that's exactly it. That, hey, it's possible we can live together.
I wonder if the screenwriters of the movie Josie Wales were influenced directly or indirectly by this particular speech.
Could have been.
It's possible.
And nice little factoid. He was 39 when he gave this speech in Washington.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Think about it now. He's 15 to 20 years younger than where we are now.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's prescient in his ways of seeing the world. He is world weary and world wise, and still at his prime, as they would say, at 39. Yeah.
He lived to 64.
But, yeah.
I mean, it's one of those things, and we still, I think I can speak for pretty much everybody in this room with this one. To this day, we still can't trust the U.S. government as far as we can throw it.
At least I know three of us agree with that. Right?
Yeah. Well, no, yeah, I would agree with that.
I've ever met your chief by the double tongues.
Any disagreement on your part, Andre?
Absolutely not.
No. There are people that are trustworthy. They are few and far between.
Exactly.
But as a whole, it is not. Because those few people have little to no power.
Yes.
Well, you know, that's the interesting thing. People are weird anyways. But one of the things that I think is just something that just occurred to me is, you know, thinking about how all of this stuff works out. On the one hand, you can say that individually, you know, it's relatively easy to know whether to trust somebody, you know.
Yeah.
Most people can get a sense of, you seem like a decent guy, I don't think you'll screw me over, or, oh yeah, you're definitely going to screw me over.
And you're usually going to be wrong.
And you, I don't think so. The more people you get together up to a certain point, I think you're more likely to be able to trust them to do what they say. Because I think to a certain point, there's an interlocking, not trust or guardianship.
Trust is a good word of it, because the more people you add, the trust is diluted and therefore eventually goes away.
That's not what I'm saying.
No?
No.
I think up to a certain point, the larger the group, the more likely you are to self-police that keeping of the word.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. But when you get to a certain point, you get to a large enough group,
you no longer
have that ability, because you no longer have a closer connection to be able to self-police.
Yeah, it's the dilution, yeah.
Yeah, that's where it happens.
It reaches a certain extremely
high level. It's a bell curve.
Okay, yeah, this is good.
And when you get to the level of governments dealing with minority groups, whether it's by number or by race or whatever, you are less able to trust them because they are farther away. It is the lack of subsidiarity.
Yes. Oh, yeah, the lack of local
the interaction, because you become indifferent at distance.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That's right, yeah.
There's always the next thing to go accomplish.
Mm-hmm. Right. One-on-one, you got just as likely a chance to be screwed over.
Yeah.
Two-on-one, two-on-three, whatever, you know, mm-hmm. it kind of makes you more likely to at least be a little bit safer, or to absolutely know you're going to get screwed over. One way or the other.
Depending on the situation, yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
But the farther you get, the more people, the mm-hmm. less sure you are until you reach a certain point where, screw it, I'm hosed.
There's a line in the first Men in Black that you guys, I'm sure, will remember when Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones are talking about the nature of humanity. Before mm-hmm. Will Smith, he says, you know, a person can be reasonable and rational, but people are crazy, irrational, herd animals, and you know it.
Yeah.
And he's exactly right, as usual.
To pile on with movie quotes, what we just described was the plot line to The Hunger Games. From mm-hmm. a distance equates to non-equality.
Well, and you hit a prime example on that, which I'm going to toss this into. Let's think of the situation here. The Native Americans were nowhere had a presence in any of the cities, the government. They were all tucked away in places that nobody else wanted. Uh-huh. They had no experience or knowledge of the process that was doing them wrong at the time,
yes.
or how to even effectively make a stand, combat it. Other than fight physically.
Yeah, the political process was denied them.
Yes, entirely. Well,
but even in, as Cajun's pointing out, even in intellectual process, this is unique because it's one of the few kind of protests that the rest of us could understand.
Yeah, he mm-hmm. went through the system, which most of his people did not, they didn't understand.
Do. Yeah, there's no way to do it.
It's too
no
alien.
Communication. Mm-hmm. And so it is very special and very unique that he was able to interact on the white man's terms
and take them to task.
Yep.
Take us.
Yes. Unfortunately, I don't know what the immediate effect of this was, but considering the time it was given, obviously there was not much.
No. Not much.
It fell on deaf ears
for the most part. Yeah, I mean, there were some groups that heard it, tried to help out where they could, but then it comes back to having a lack of power and ability mm-hmm. to change things or do anything.
Well, that's one of the advantages of democracy is if you can get enough people on your side, change is possible. And the abolitionist movement was mm-hmm. one of those they were jokes in the 1820s and 30s, but by the time of the 1850s, they have become such a force that they can no longer be ignored.
Right.
The South secedes mm-hmm. because they perceive Lincoln as an abolitionist president.
Well, and I wonder if the Indian Wars and what happened there can be tied to the experience of the Civil War.
Oh, I definitely think so.
Not just because we sent or all of these guys that were trained to kill and no longer could fit into their own polite society went west where there were no rules, not even just that, but because if you think about it, the plight of slaves are not entirely different in a certain level.
There are some similarities,
from the plight of the tribes. The main difference was slaves were part of white society as servants,
right? Mm-hmm.
Whereas the tribes are not.
Yes.
I mean, well, they were there.
Gotcha.
Okay. Whereas the tribes are not. Is
they are ex? They are outside the system.
They are outside the system,
and the system cannot abide that.
Well, the system can't abide that, but I think by the time you get to the 1870s, especially when people are just like, all right, we're done with Reconstruction. We're
77. Yeah.
And
Hayes is elected. Yeah, and it all mm-hmm. changes.
And when we get to that, those that might have been sympathetic have basically spent all their energy on 600,000 dead. And couple that with the fact that they are outside the system.
Yeah. It's not so much that those the system can't abide them. It's the system doesn't even understand they exist.
Right. Yeah. And those who might have had sympathy have just been worn out. And don't have the ability.
There's a fatigue factor.
Yeah.
So socially.
To make the leap to those that they don't even see.
Well, yeah. Proximity has a huge amount to do with it. And you're right, because in other words, we have just gone through a bloody war to free people. And we haven't recovered from that. And now we have more people we need to free. We're not into that anymore. We're done. The cost was too high.
Maybe if the reservations had stayed in the east instead of having them all pushed west, maybe that
could have been enveloped into society easier. But I'm glad you mentioned up about the killer angels basically going west. And there's two sides to that coin when you stop and think about it. You had the ones that had very little soul left of themselves on good, right or wrong,
right,
that went out there and for power, control. And then you had the other ones that didn't fit into civilized society that went and found a home among the Native Americans, lived and learned from them. They became a lot of your scouts and so
forth. Oh, really? Okay, well, that's...
And found a place out there that wasn't civilized society, but it was a society that they could fit in. Well,
because their sins didn't go with them, because they weren't understood.
The sins didn't go with them, but they had a rougher, more violent nature, which the Native Americans, they fought amongst each other, like we talked earlier. They counted coup and stuff, but it wasn't always necessarily a killing thing, even.
Interesting you say that.
The strength of society that they could find a place into.
I had no idea that you were going to go there. I thought you were going to make the dichotomy, which is still a dichotomy, of those who were turned loose because they couldn't fit in. And then those who, on the northern side, stayed in the army because they loved killing so much. Well, they were allowed to be.
Yes, you had those two, but then you had the third factor that I just brought up, to found a place to live.
Repeat the beginning of that, because Martin wants me to press a button here.
No, I don't even remember what it was that I said.
Dichotomy.
Dichotomy, okay, yeah. Yeah,
I just wanted to give Francis credit for his.
I appreciate that, because
we didn't have a word boner in the earlier episode. Right.
No, we didn't. And
but you're right, there's three types of individuals that flood into this on the negative side. Is that, I'm assuming that's what you're saying here.
Right.
The disaffected troops, for lack of a better term, mm-hmm. who have fought this,
you either
go west as part of the white civilization and take the lawlessness because you love it, you stay part of the army so you can continue your lawlessness under a legal guise, or you go into the Native American system where you can try and start again, but your past still comes with you.
Well, yes, and these men that were good and fit into the societies were welcomed in a lot of cases and adopted into tribes and so forth.
Well, because they were warriors, they were blooded. You know,
right.
there wasn't
a lot of them. No. Now, I'm not saying this was a common thing, but there was some that found a place among the Native Americans.
Which goes back to our treatment of our veterans, which is its whole another episode. Yeah. But this is an example of it. Just so happened there were places for all these disaffected veterans. So the government, happily in their minds, could say, oh, forget about you.
I mean, on a side note, locally, Daniel Boone.
Absolutely.
He was accepted by the Cherokees, and he was brought in as a blood brother, a member of the tribe in the area.
Because going back to what Robert was saying here, on an individual level, you can make those connections far easier of trust. Mm-hmm. As you grow, it gets far more difficult, but possible. But then once you reach a certain level, it becomes almost impractical at best.
Yes, and I think that has a lot to do with when the balance of power
shifts
dramatically. Mm-hmm.
Yep. That's
So something Francis said reminded me of a Star Trek episode.
Oh,
I feel like I'm living inside Francis's head. I'm reluctant to even bring it up.
Go ahead. Please go. Please do.
I don't recall the name of the episode.
Francis, I'll tell you. Go ahead.
Francis will know.
Yeah.
Dainar. Roga Dainar. Jamie Cromwell episode.
Is this the Hunted? I think is the one from Next Generation. Took me a second. I thought you were going to original series.
The black and white faces?
No,
that's let that be your last.
The veterans that are
abandoned. The Hunted is the episode. And he escapes. And
Roga Dainar
escapes, and he brings into the understanding of this plight because he is a trained killer, genetically so in this society.
Right.
And they have banished them to this place because they have become an embarrassment. They become uncomfortable inconvenient.
Same thing goes with Khan. Khan and his followers were banished for battle.
Yeah.
And when the battle was done, they were too dangerous.
You're right, exactly. Even though Kirk, I think, was motivated by compassion, but you're exactly right. I think the tendency inside us to get rid of those things that do not conform mm-hmm. is
right.
much
so, again,
deeper.
The point of that episode being that the they don't fit anymore because our society is so peaceful. You think about,
yes.
okay, yes, so we push the veterans, or we open this land hoping the veterans well. Of the Civil War
we'll
go
away.
Out there.
Go away. And,
go away.
And, okay. Yeah.
And
if you can,
get out
if you can,
there someplace.
If you'll be a good boy, you can stay. But if you can't, get the hell out of here.
Well,
you know, I don't know that it was that well thought out.
No, I think I think it was so natural
yeah.
that it's it became
its
own thing.
It was meant to be a reward. You know, here we're going to open up the West.
The Homestead Act
and
things like
and
that.
And do all
yeah.
that and move out there. But the effect is, yes, we're pushing all of these killers.
All right. I believe Imperator has a comment over here. He's been trying to slide in.
It's one of the things that all of these problems that we have with war and you know, our gladiators, so to speak.
Yeah.
The way that they're taking the approach to solve that now is a real simple approach, and that is turn it into a video game. Let's do drones. Let's do this. You don't have to actually see somebody right one-on-one. It's turned into something where those individuals are now non-human again.
Death at remote control.
Oh, that goes back to another Star Trek episode, doesn't it? From the
and that that's the solution for taking care of our veterans. Let's make it so that they're not. You know, they don't have all the PTSD. They don't have all of this.
Yeah, in other words, we'll just let the computer calculate up the deaths and we'll have them report to their disintegration stations. I mean, Star Trek did that very well. And I Kirk was, as usual, very wise when he says, you know, real war is very messy. You had no reason to end it. Now that you have to resort to real weapons, you'll make peace.
Yeah.
And there's some thought
to
that.
Which is a violation of the Prime Directive, which was...
Oh, well, one of many.
Well, that's a whole other subject on how many times he broke the Crown Directive. But I imagine it's about time to be hitting that button about now, I'd say. Bourbon break.
Oh, we have a unique... my thunder again.
It should be spread around. I know Robert kind of gets that. But
Cajun did a good job there. He did a very good spot.
Well, we have a unique one this time.
That's right.
I was excited to get to this. And I brought this one back from Colorado.
I was going to say, Martin, you've got the bottle there, so you can probably talk to us a little bit about
yours, Andre.
Guardian Bourbon from Colorado, 1350 Distilling is called, Colorado Springs. And just giving a quick little view of the bottle, their inspiration is Space Force kind of thing. You know,
they're in the shadow of the mountain out there.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So that's out there. So
shadow of the Stargate.
I was going to say you're near Stargate Control, right?
Mm-hmm. So it's interesting. You said this has a unique mash bill, right?
It does. It's 99% mm-hmm. corn,
and it definitely comes out in the smell.
But when you think 99% corn, well, it's not going to have any notes. It's not going to have any flavors. But as it has bloomed, I think all mm-hmm. of us here discovered that it is very unique that
very
things
much
do
so.
Come forth.
Yes, it does. I like it. It's mild.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's no pepperiness like you would get from a rye.
Mm-hmm. What is that 1% that is not? Is that a barley?
It has to be the malted barley because that's always your
based on my first
start.
Taste, it's pure evil.
It does kind of hit you in the face at first till it starts blooming.
Brother Andre is not a fan.
This one won't be on the purchase cart.
Okay. Expound, sir.
The initial ethanol breeze, like I said, it hits you very, very hard.
Uh-huh.
After
that was neat, right? When you tested
that was neat.
Yeah.
There was some very subtle hints of, I called it tangerine or citrus, but it was overwhelmed by the strength of the drink, and I didn't much care for that.
See, you have a very good habit I wish I could get into. You take a little bit neat, just as soon as the ice hits, so before it has a chance to bloom, so you get that experience, and then you also have a bloomed experience, which is different in both cases.
See, I'm surprised you don't do that, because we've been talking about that for
you're right.
Time.
I just forget. It's
I just don't think of doing it that way.
I can't find the other 1%, but you know, it's either got to be wheat or barley, one or the other, I imagine. It actually was first distilled in Lawrenceburg, Indiana, and then shipped out to Colorado to be finished aging out there in the Rockies.
As a matter of fact, I've got, if you remember, I picked up a bottle recently of the Lawrenceburg stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Oh, so this is the same stuff?
No.
They didn't call it that?
It's different stuff, but the whole... That particular area, since it was so heavy with corn and they weren't growing anything really else.
No, when you drive through Indiana up 65, all you see is corn.
Corn for the most part.
Corn.
And so you ended up with whiskeys up in that area that were 99% or 100% corn. It was just leftovers from the grain corn.
Yeah, well, you know, it's well done. I like it. It's different. I'm not as down on it as Andre, I think, because it's mild. Mm-hmm. That's what kind of lets it.
It is only 80 proof.
Yes, yeah. And I was going to ask that question because and it's the lowest that you can be to be considered bourbon or whiskey.
Uh-huh.
But it was really I liked it. You're right. There's not a lot of notes here, but that's okay. If you know that going in, you know it doesn't. You know there's room enough for all varieties.
If it's so plain and without much to differentiate it, why not just get
Wild Turkey
$12 Old Fitzgerald or something?
Well, I think that this would have a place in the shelf, but it would be as a mixer with a.
With Maker's Mark,
a juice, or a
I'm not
cola.
Sure you would. I'm not even sure you would want to use this as a mixer, just because. I think you're going to lose its uniqueness very quickly because the ice ball here. Because again, Cajun has provided some very large balls here of ice.
Uh-huh.
He's got the biggest balls.
Not
of
the first time I've heard that.
I was waiting for the AC/DC to come out because we haven't used that much, and we should.
That's a great record.
Yeah,
it is. Yes, but anyways. Because I debated whether or not to use some of the smaller pieces of bullet ice that you got over here out of the maker, and I wish I had, because too much water, like with the last bourbon, which was also an 80 proof. No, that was an 88. But this one, I think, even diluted even faster.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think that other one retained even at toward the middle of the ice melt. Retain more character than this one.
Well, because this is a low proof.
It's
a low proof. Extrapolate what Robert said.
99% corn.
Well,
all the notes it got from the wood, basically.
Right, and I think...
aged and charred oak.
And I think this may have even been a low char, just because of how light the color is.
How light the color is, yes.
Because it's 5 years in the barrel. 5 years should be a...
This was 3 years.
Oh, the other one was 5.
Years, yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Well, this is only 3. Well, that would explain.
Well, that explains a lot of it. Yeah, I think this would benefit from a couple more years.
But yeah, when I first poured it for me, and I thought, wow. But then as the ice melted and it really opened up, then you can start detecting those notes that it picked up from the wood.
Uh-huh. And but then to a certain point, then it all goes away because you've diluted it.
It does.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, you should be – that's where a lot of that candy – type flavor should be coming from is getting those sugars in the wood going in and out, and I just
and of course you got to stop and consider this was aged at a much higher elevation in the Rockies.
Oh yeah, it's completely different than what we're used to here locally. I mean, whatever
humidity
is
different,
it is.
Everything
low pressure. Humidity, high pressure from the altitude.
Well, low pressure.
Yeah.
Well, so it's just not pushing in and out of that wood like.
Well, which I think it's a valid experiment to try something different. Is it a winner?
Well, I mean, one of the things you have to consider is it is I compare them to like barbecue. You have a South Carolina barbecue. You have Kansas City
Kansas City, Texas,
Kentucky. Everything's different.
Yeah.
This
like
is very distinctively from that Lawrenceburg area and what have you, Lawrence County, Indiana, up in there. Which is, you know, you've got all the limestone, you've got all the caves and everything else, but you've got an almost exclusive corn base to everything.
Yeah.
Unlike down here where you've got, you know, a number of different things going on.
Right.
So it's very much distinctive to that area of Indiana that apparently somebody took with them and just, you know, started doing it there.
Did you say this was distilled in Indiana and shipped?
It was distilled in Lawrenceburg, Indiana, and then shipped to Colorado for aging.
Is it still done that way, or is it distilled there now?
I don't know. This just came out Last year, I think she told me.
Oh, so it's a relatively recent product.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that also probably explains why it's only a 3 year.
Yeah, they're trying to get their feet into the market. In other words, I suspect their product extensions as they continue will be different because they'll have longer age stuff, and we'll see where it goes.
Possibly, or different mash bills.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean,
you can pick up some of that oak in it as it opens up.
Yes. I get that very much so, yeah.
Earthy tone.
The char. And
I'm not going to say that this is an off list like a Trader Joe's out the window.
Oh, God, no.
I think it's quite unique in what it is. It's very regional, as Imperator just said, and it's something different to bring out to kind of clean the palate every once in a while.
Oh, that's good. I like that option. That's correct, because it does kind of, it's a cleanser. You definitely get that. Yeah. It's a one-note Charlie, but that's not a bad thing. It's just if you know it.
Yeah,
you know,
but it's
Martin don't like
it's
that.
It's just not one to go out of your way for. I don't think.
No,
I appreciate it's veteran-owned. That's awesome.
Yes,
and again, they're kind of it's named for the Space Force, Space Guardians. It's unique, but it just felt really really
flat.
Well,
they're trying to find their niche in the market that has so many products.
It's one of those things. Like, well, it's not bad, but it's just. There's nothing, nothing grabbing me.
Well, it's
kind
of like frontier whiskey in a way, primarily corn, like Bullet, and so forth. Yeah. Doesn't have a whole lot of flavors. I mean,
maybe this is what you start somebody on because it's not going to overwhelm them, either in the burn or the.
Martin
the,
is having none of it. It seems.
So
like.
I'd say this is probably more originally accepted out west, where frontier whiskey was more prominent than the bourbon they had back in the South here, and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I just don't think, I would start somebody on bourbon with this because I don't think.
No, I'd start somebody on a weeded bourbon if I'm going to start them on anything.
I mean, if I'm trying to get somebody to come into bourbon, I think the place I'm going to start is Wild Turkey.
I would agree with that.
Because they're gonna go, oh, wow, I can taste pears and vanilla. And then you can build on that with the others that have that more complexity. This is just sort of kind of a little oily, flat, sort of.
See, I don't get the
whiskey
part.
The question we need to ask ourselves, are we just spoiled?
Well, yes.
I'm starting to think so. That's
Well, I mean, but part of it is, too, is all our palates are different. And what's hitting.
Well,
aging is hitting me differently.
In fairness, though, Martin is our master taster, and you have a more
master what?
No. I'm ceding the title to Cajun because he does. I think he gets them better than I do.
I agree, both of you do well, but you usually pull out things that I couldn't even begin.
Yeah,
to.
This one just doesn't grab me. It just doesn't have that same. Like that chocolate or candy or any of those kind of flavors.
And
we get
I
out
think
of the really
you had a preference thing on there for your personality and on what you like.
Yeah.
Okay.
But part of the issue is we've grown up with primarily Kentucky bourbon from around here, which has its own distinctive styles and notes and everything else. This is, I mean, the original distilling up there was started back in the 1800s, and they kept it very consistent. Yeah. So you've got a whole region that's different. It's just like the fact that, you know, myself personally can't stand Carolina barbecue.
Really?
I just don't like the vinegar.
No, vinegar is
evil. I love it.
Okay.
I love
some
it.
People
so
love
I love
it.
It. And because it's pork focused rather than beef.
And that's just like Kansas City barbecue's primarily beef and, you know, a lot of people from around here can't stand it.
Yeah, I get that.
It's a very regional
it's
taste.
It's meat with sauce. How can anybody not
can't
like
go
it?
Go wrong.
Yeah, you can. You can screw it up.
You can.
It's a taste preference. That's like, I'm really fond of Alabama white.
Exactly.
And that's technically not a barbecue sauce.
It is. Her Majesty's brother is very good and astute at creating some homemade stuff on that. And it's very good. Uh-huh. But I.
Who
you know,
is? Who is?
Her Majesty's brother.
Who? Yeah. You ain't eating today, boy.
Well, he didn't say it was better than yours.
I think it was better.
No meat for you.
I didn't even get an honorable mention out of that sentence.
I know. You're
you can't have any pudding unless you eat your meat.
That's right.
We've got the meats.
Imperator, question.
Yes.
You've been on the other side of the country and spent a few years out there.
Yes.
Would you think this might fly out on the West Coast? This corn-based.
I don't know. I mean, it would. It depends on whether or not what somebody has gotten accustomed to. You've got a number of distilleries that have come up over the years for bourbon and what have you in the Pacific Northwest.
Really? I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. Woodinville and a lot of them.
I thought they were coffee people out there.
No, that's Seattle.
Well, There's I know, but that's where you were at, though.
There is a difference between Seattle and the rest of the Northwest.
Okay.
And would it? Yeah, I think it'd play out. I think it'd play just fine in a vast majority of the country that hasn't been able to be, I hate to say it, but prejudiced by a particular
influence.
Or influence.
I think this one would be frowned on in Texas and accepted in California.
Yeah, right.
That's probably true. That see now when good. I said or when yeah. I suggested earlier that this would be a starter bourbon for people, you know, you immediately went to well, no, because they're not going to get the pears and all. People when they're starting out aren't going to get that. Yeah. You didn't get that when we started.
Yeah,
our palates had to develop to that point.
Yeah, point to Robert.
But I got it as soon as we tried Wild Turkey though.
Well, and that's fair.
I had Wild Turkey before that and had it, but
that was way in though.
Yeah, but I that's mean, pretty far in.
That's yes, pretty yeah, far in.
After
yeah.
we after stopping,
but it acquired a knowledge base by that.
After stopping sugary drinks,
but I mean, that's and, true. But
and
that was
no longer mixing.
Realistically,
that was probably
though,
a year into our Bourbon Breaks before we hit because it was at my house. I wanted to have the Wild Turkey.
At least, yeah.
But I mean, Texas, as far as whiskey, is not a bourbon state.
No, but well,
actually,
I think
some of the best non-Kentucky ones come from
it
there.
It is you now.
They
things
like
are coming.
Stack flavors,
but
I'm just saying that you know the complexity.
This is just kind of a white wine of bourbon.
I will give you credit for your eloquence, sir.
Yeah,
I will.
This
I will
does not have
otherwise.
A bountiful bouquet to it.
No,
see, and I think that lack of that
complexity.
I think that complexity overwhelms people.
Sometimes it does.
Okay. That's right. And
you got to build to it. A palate cleanser.
You've got to build to it. That's right.
And like my wife, she can. Mrs. Robert is not a whiskey drinker at all. Mm-hmm. Now, part of that was because, sitting around the table with her grandparents from of the Polish background, Grandpa Rue would he had the bottle that never contained the nice stuff that was on the label. He'd pour the rock gut in there.
You told us. Yeah, that's right.
Vodka.
He kept the good stuff hidden and poured the nasty stuff in there and without a label so nobody knows.
Well, it had a label. It just wasn't the label.
Oh, it wasn't the right one. That's right. Yeah. He could say, this is the good stuff. But
so,
it's not really.
So his actions...
Nice.
To his words.
Yes.
Words.
He's bringing us back again. Yeah.
Words.
Circle us back.
Which we probably need to be getting back. Anybody have any final notes on this product?
I'll cede the floor.
I wouldn't go there first.
Because you're reeling us in.
But I wouldn't turn it. I mean, I wouldn't turn it down, but I wouldn't go there first.
I enjoyed its difference.
Yeah. If somebody bought me a bottle, or a drink of it, I'd be okay.
I missed myself.
I wouldn't pick it out of the lineup.
Robert, that was the clearest example of. I wouldn't kick her out of bed less than I wanted her on the floor kind of response to a bourbon that I've ever heard.
As usual, the Imperator uses the perfect imagery and language.
I like that.
Okay,
I do not disagree.
I cannot beat that. That's
let's
right, just,
get back into this here. And I'm going to do the last bit of this speech.
Please do so, yes.
I think that we cannot not do all of the speech since it's not that long a one.
You are a master captain.
For the honor of Chief Joseph and his integrity.
I submit that you should be promoted to fleet captain for doing this so well by giving us this in three pieces and finishing it up here at the end. Bravo, sir. Well, well done.
All right.
He's trying to get back into the having
good grace as well.
That sounds like it, doesn't it?
Lunch is coming here shortly, and I don't want to be kind of left in the quest for fire.
He's going to be left at the kitty table.
Do you need a tissue to wipe the brown off your nose?
Oh, sure, go right ahead.
Oh, my. All right, back to business. The earth is the mother of all people, and all people should have equal rights upon it. You might as well expect the rivers to run backwards as that any man who was born a free man should be contented when penned up and denied liberty to go where he pleases. If you tie a horse to a stake, do you expect he will grow fat? If you pin an Indian up on a small spot of earth and compel him to stay there, he will not be contented, nor will he grow and prosper. I have asked some of the great white chiefs where they get their authority to say that the Indian that he shall stay in one place while he sees white men going anywhere they please. They can't tell me. I only ask of the government to be treated as all other men are treated.
Wow.
Amen. This man I would almost have to think was an inspiration to Martin Luther King Jr.
Oh, some of the you are brilliant with that. You're exactly right. Maybe not directly, but
he's hitting question, universal.
He's hitting those universal human truths that we love to really explore here on that. Irony of ironies, we were just talking about the fact that in modern Native Americans don't go where they will. They stay where they're at. And yet he is saying that it is natural to the human culture, but in particular to his Native American tribal culture, to roam.
Well, if they stay where they're at, then there's no law keeping them there. Does that not mean that they are where they want to be?
Yeah.
Well, this it is anti-evolutionary in many respects, because we must change and grow to
curiosity
survive.
Is one of humanity's greatest qualities.
Well, yeah, sorry. The entire, and to go Star Trek, the whole exploration idea is based on that sort of thing. And it's a human thing. And the entire reservation system, which is what he's talking about here, is anti-human, inhumane, because it robs his people of their natural, and he wouldn't use these words, but it's kind of what he's referring to, God-given right to go where we please. Freedom without that is meaningless.
It's just a jail on a larger scale.
That's exactly right. Then there is no freedom. If you cannot, freedom of association with who you please.
Well, and it's not even necessarily the desire that I absolutely have to go somewhere else.
Right.
It's the fact that they're told that they can't go anywhere.
Right, yes, right.
A gilded cage is still a cage.
Yes. And you know,
walking apart in the war for a lead role in a cage to steal from Roger Waters.
It's one thing to as we talked about in the last episode, how most people don't travel more than 15 to 20 miles away from home.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm
but they
kind,
can.
Of what, kind of
but
what
they can. But they can. Choose not to.
Yeah.
And and maybe that's just expressed maybe that is one way in which the Native Americans have assimilated, in that they no longer roam, even though they can. And I think partly that's because they have kept their individual tribal identities.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Whereas we take great pride in this country about being a melting pot. But realistically, all of Western civilization is a melting pot. Yeah. We are just the most... the freshest example of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The lowest, all of
obvious example.
Yeah. All of Europe is a melting pot.
Yeah.
But it melted and congealed a long time ago.
Yeah.
We are still in that process, even today.
Well, and people sometimes don't want to be melted in.
Mm-hmm.
It's like,
right. A good number of the immigrants into Europe now don't want to be
melted. They don't want to be melted in.
Resistance is futile.
I think you're exactly right, Andre, because sooner or later it's generational. You might not want to as a first or second generation, but by the time the third and fourth comes along, it's done. And there's nothing you can do to stop that.
Yes.
But, we talk about assimilation as a bad thing. It's not, though.
No, not at all.
It's not.
Not necessarily a good thing either. It's neutral.
It's neutral. It's what you do with it, because assimilation can teach you how to live together. Back to 10 Bears and Josie Wales.
Yeah.
How do you learn to live together? Well, I learn a little bit about you. You learn a little bit about me.
I eat your food. You eat my food.
And we understand that we're all the same thing. We're humans suck. But if we could recognize that in each other and be decent.
Yeah.
It's like the Lego movie. Just be nice to each other. I mean, Jesus, it's not that hard. Just be nice to each other.
Sign of the Comanche. That shall be on our lodge.
Well,
I don't know that it's necessarily, you say it's not that hard, but, we had a guy about 2,000 years ago that was saying the exact same thing, and they strung him up on a cross.
Well, that's correct. He was a radical.
That wasn't
exactly
what he was saying.
Love each other.
Yeah, well, that's...
No. Love God first.
Well, yes.
Then love each other as you love yourself.
Yeah. They're concurrent.
They
are connected.
It is.
And he called out those
thing.
Who did not, and those were the ones that were in power.
And then people wonder why he hasn't returned yet. Well, hell, he didn't get a good send off the last time.
Makes you a little gun shy, don't it?
Cross shy.
And with that phrase, here's a little irony, if you haven't stopped to think about it or ever come across this. That one place for the Native Americans to escape to, the men, was the military. They joined the military. I'm not sure what the numbers was for World War I. They might have still been considered not worthy to say at that point. But at World War II, the Korean conflict, the Vietnam mm-hmm. conflict, a lot of the young males went off in the military to get the a sense talkers. Of some yeah, of their missing talkers. Culture yep. that they didn't have anymore by being put on the reservations. They were put into combat, the strength, the honor, the mm-hmm. contest of it. That filled in some
the
of that
camaraderie
through the white man's yeah. culture.
Yeah,
ironically,
assimilation.
Yeah, yeah. They well, adopted you know, portions of the white man's culture that were similar to that which they had lost of their own.
Well, you know, a couple of things about that assimilation. I know I'm the one who brought it up, but I just want to point this out. One, assimilation is a lot easier when the two people that are being, and maybe it's amalgamation is better than assimilation.
Yeah. Okay. I like that better. Yeah,
mm-hmm. is that. It's easier to happen when both groups look alike, or at least look
oh,
close.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So I want to make sure we do acknowledge yep. that. Yep.
That's how the Irish and the Italians have assimilated pretty well.
And the Germans.
And the Germans. French, whereas
the Croats and the Poles.
Right, but when you start adding those from Asian descent or Native American descent, less so.
Or the Africans.
Yeah, I mean, they right. had a hard way to go, just like the blacks, the Asians,
sure.
and so forth,
right.
the military.
Yeah.
But they were highly respected for a lot of their skills a lot of time.
Well, eventually,
and within a generation or two, assimilation
it becomes
or amalgamation
that way,
was
yeah.
done. Whereas, I think it is important to recognize that that physical difference is what drives a lot
of
the
race. Yeah,
yes.
racism.
What was
is,
one of
is
the most famous groups during World War II?
The Navajo Code Talkers. I
there
knew that's
you
where
go.
You're going. Yeah. And in many respects, they are the ones, and their cultural appropriation, if you want to be negative, cultural assimilation or borrowing, to be a little bit more positive, is what saved so many lives, because the Japanese, who were, as we know, extremely, extremely efficient, they could not break that code.
Well, extremely efficient, xenophobic.
Well, that's
racist.
Correct. I'm not, yeah, I mean,
they were.
I'm speaking
they were
on a practical level.
They Nazis, but yes,
yeah.
at that time,
that's
I'm
correct.
Not saying
yeah.
they are now, yeah. but you know, that's why I like the word amalgamation better. You know,
I think
hate
it's too
this idea of cultural appropriation
because it assumes a dominance that
well, amalgamation takes means both are changed in the combined. Mm.
Absolutely,
yes,
that's right.
Well, the way it's used nowadays, it's almost like you know I'm not allowed. You know, I shouldn't be allowed to enjoy something from another culture. Because it's not mine, and
it's so stupid.
And I think that's stupid. Now, should I take elements of another culture and make it into a joke, or wear it as a costume,
right.
just
or
fun?
Claim it as
claim
mine,
it.
Or,
claim it
or
as
worse,
right.
claim
yeah.
it as my own?
Yeah, yeah. And there, Rachel Hollyans, I think, is the one that was famous yeah. for doing that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, the other people's culture should not be a joke.
Yeah,
but there's nothing I morally, like, I do right, just do right. not think there's something wrong with adopting things that you like.
Right. And it
culture.
Goes
I
back
think that honors
and Martin,
the culture.
Martin right. names it exactly right. Right.
As we said, it's that's how you will learn yeah. about someone
and
else.
And food is the number one way. That's yeah. why
on Brother
Andre's one of the
right on
one of the biggest cultural bringers together is though and thank goodness Louisville, which is a very large has a large immigrant population, we're one of the second
Any,
largest
yeah.
in,
anything
the, in the
you,
city.
Yeah, anything you want to find to eat, you can.
Yeah, and you can find that ethnic restaurant of just about all stripes that is succeeding
yeah.
In a largely white community yeah. because we recognize, you know, this is pretty good stuff.
Good is just good.
Oh yeah,
exactly. That's right, and that's I think gives me a little bit of hope. And I like to, I like to end this more on a
on the food note now, because I can smell the food wafting out here from the
yeah.
kitchen. Let's wrap this up. Let's start wrapping this up. And I'm just going to say that I appreciate y'all giving me a little bit to use this entire speech. I don't think it's something that could have been cut totally short. The words say and mean too much and came from the heart of a great man.
Yeah. And it's
and
it's not
I'm not even
going
to
well
try to put another
be.
Explanation on it. It says what it says. And then I will move to Francis, and we'll come around, and we'll end up at Robert as usual.
All right. We are going to go into something totally different next episode.
No. I want final words on this.
Oh, final words.
Yeah.
Oh,
final
yeah.
words. Yeah.
Oh, and come around to him, and then we'll.
So I can hammer it home.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. I think these words are not near well known enough. As
Amen.
As they should be.
Exactly.
I do agree that these are probably mentioned in school. I'm not going to go against that, but I will say that they should be more. I agree Dr. King is probably influenced by this, or they were perhaps influenced by the same, my opinion, Holy Spirit source to change society one block at a time because it's been glacial, but there has been movement. Imperator?
No. I mean, I agree with you. I think
that these are words that need to be repeated and taught.
Yes.
And in reality, there are so few enlightened words that are being taught now or being used to inspire people towards, you know, what he's asking for, which is that all men are treated equally.
Yeah, some words that are enshrined for us, and yet we don't live up to them, which, you know, of course, that's his point.
Sadly.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah.
I think the reflection I take away from this is that the power of the powerful over the less powerful is a part of human history that goes all the way back to the Israel and the Romans.
Sure.
To what we see here with the Native Americans, to what we even see in the late 20th century with people doing hostile takeovers of corporations and trying to control political power through super PACs and PACs. And in our daily life, we need to be conscious of people that are taken advantage of, and it's easier to identify when you're on the lesser side. It takes greater fortitude to do it when you're on the greater side and things are going your way.
The powerful
that's
always
a brilliant insight.
Absolutely. Yes. Powerful will always dominate the weak unless we somehow prevent that. Martin?
So I see a lot of what attracts Cajun, you know, to this quote, because there's that snake of libertarianism swinging through this whole quote. And then my second piece is, I want to stress, it's not that words don't have value. Words do have value. That's the expression of our values. But then again, that second piece is, you have to then live those values after you express them.
You know, a great friend of the show just wrote a book about values that touches on some of this.
So that's
what
it's. Yeah. Words are important, not to lessen what words are. They're an expression of that intellectual process that brings us to our values. But then the second step is important.
Yeah. So the words have to be followed up by the actions to match them. So to me, this quote, I said it early on, it's a scathing indictment. But the reason why it's a scathing indictment is that it exposes the failings. And as is so often the case, whether it be strong group against a weak group, or even sometimes when weak groups manage to strike back against the strong. All of these conflicts and betrayals, because that's essentially what this is talking about. Mm-hmm. It's a betrayal of
Absolutely.
Everything that was ever said to them.
Indeed.
Yeah. Every treaty always broken.
Yeah. It highlights in very specific ways, although not specific instances, but in very specific ways, how the white men of this country, those in power, failed in their most primal duty.
Oh, primal, I like that.
Yeah, their most fundamental duty to other humans.
Exactly, it's that inherent respect for the inherent dignity of the
human person.
It really is. I know I like to talk about that all the time, but
you ain't the only one.
But it's the root.
It's
the root of morality.
If they had done that, then none of this would have happened.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, even if they had even just a modicum of respect for that inherent dignity, because when you think about the history of slavery, of relations with the native tribes, of any group that exercises malicious power, because there can be benevolent power,
domination
over another group, it always lacks that respect and that for that inherent dignity. And the reason I like to point that out, I don't like to point it out. I hate that I have to point it out.
Yeah,
is that my faith compels me to do that.
Well, you take your faith seriously.
Because I take my faith seriously.
That's right.
I cannot be Catholic, Christian. I cannot be a man of faith without that respect for the inherent dignity, because I cannot be a brother in Christ. I cannot be a brother to you guys. I cannot be even a friend to somebody who's not Christian without that.
Amen, brother.
And, Indeed. You know, we have not been a friend to the natives of this land.
Well, up till now, hopefully that's changing.
Slowly, maybe, but very slowly.
Very slowly.
Well, it's a long way to go because, I mean, the population now on the reservations, so much drug abuse, physical abuse, sexual abuse, alcohol abuse, and more Native American women go missing than any other population every friggin' year.
Absolutely.
And why can't something be done about
that? That's correct.
Because you're not talking about massive stretches. You know where it's happening.
Absolutely.
I mean, come on.
There was a TV series, Alaska Daily, that was which did not get renewed. Hillary Swank was in it. And it was exactly about that in the Alaska area, the Native American women, the Inuit women up there that would go missing constantly, and violence against them was epidemic, and there was a malaise. You might hit the button on that one because I think it's pretty good. But
malaise.
Oh, he's forgotten
the word boner.
Oh, he finally found his boner.
That's right.
I got to read the labels, and it's tiny text.
I know we're coming to the end, and here I am as I slid that in on you. But that exactly upon the part of those in power that didn't care.
That's every reservation.
And that's every reservation.
I didn't mean to step on your last word, but I just felt that.
No, that's
to be put out there loudly and clear.
Yeah.
All right.
No, I think that's worthy to mention. And absolutely.
One last shout for Brother Andre and the use of amalgam. That's really sticking in my brain now, and to use that instead of assimilation.
Yeah,
because absolutely. I really love that as a positive term, because in an amalgam, all the components, the final product takes on the best.
There's an equality and there's a positivity.
Well done, Brother Andre.
Indeed.
So,
thank you.
Well, next episode, we are going to change subject, totally new subject again. We're going to let Robert have the captain's chair. And I don't know why we've never done this. It's kind of odd. We're going to talk about
because Star Trek seems to dominate.
Yeah, because he's the only one that gives a shit.
Lord. We're going to talk about Star Wars. And we're going to let Robert talk all about what we're doing and to try to figure out what the hell has happened to the Star Wars franchise. And
Disney.
What, yeah.
Well, okay. Episode's done.
Episode's done. That's right. Yeah.
I'm going to be a discerning voice in that.
All right. I demand Stargate one of these days. Then.
Well,
what
bring it on.
That franchise.
Babylon 5.
If Disney buys it, then they'll milk it for every nickel it's worth.
Yeah, they'll ruin it.
As you see, I've already started the fire. Be here next episode while we continue on it.
We hope you enjoyed another pointless discussion of Eternal Questions. Remember, new episodes drop every second and fourth Friday at 6 a.m. Eastern, just in time for your morning commute. And every fifth Friday, we drop a special Hoopajube episode. Spread the word, we are on all the major platforms, and leave us a review. That helps others find us. We're also on Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube, as well as our website, snakesandotters.com. Join us next time, same snake time, same otter channel.